I'd like now to welcome Evalee Sargent. She is Southwest Program Director for Defenders of Wildlife, and we are here to talk about something that is happening involving the New Mexico Game Commission. Welcome, Eva, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here.
So we're actually talking about wolves, and the New Mexico Game Commission is considering some new rules that would affect the recovery of the Mexican gray wolf, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, I wondered if you could tell us a bit about the wolves themselves. I mean, they were brought back from the brink of extinction. Tell us that story.
Exactly. I don't think that you can get any closer to extinction than having only five individuals left in the wild. After Mexican wolves were extirpated from this country, mostly by a public program of government agents and public private bounties, there were just a few left in Mexico by the time they were listed under the Endangered Species Act. And a trapper went down to Mexico to try to catch these last animals and did catch five, and they were brought into a captive breeding program. So this is an animal that was completely saved from extinction in the wild by captive breeding.
So the near extinction that happened in the first place was government programs because of what?
Because wolves were killing livestock. What happened in this country was that there was a whole lot of what we would call market hunting, not just subsistence hunting, but hunting for game to sell it in markets. It was moved by rail, mostly to the east. And once a lot of the game was hunted out, the wolves had nowhere to turn but to livestock. And so they did kill some livestock back then. And they were just seen as a menace. You know, they were seen as a threat to livestock raising. So there was a huge concerted program to kill wolves all over the country, including the Mexican wolf here in the Southwest.
And that concerted effort is still going on. I mean, I got an email, I think it was 1 or 2 days ago, that had to do with aerial wolf killing in Washington State because some of the wolves are eating sheep or attacking sheep. I mean, this is a very long tradition of wolf killing that's still going on.
Right. It's kind of surprising that we're still using those methods today of killing wolves if we suspect that they've killed livestock. There's a whole lot of better things to do and things that are actually more effective for ranchers to do if they're losing livestock. Defenders of Wildlife has a big program supporting ranchers in these other methods, and the methods are somewhat simple things. Some of them are like fladry, which is these odd little red strips that you hang onto your fences, and wolves stay away from them. They move in the breeze, and wolves stay away from them, so you can protect this pasture that way. We also do a lot of work where we just provide extra riders, you know, extra cowboys, extra hands-on that wolves tend to avoid people. So if there's more people with the cattle, they'll stay out of the area. There's other things like moving herds away from den sites, sometimes with supplemental feeding. But there's all kinds of ways. And we have booklets and things on our website about that and are super happy to go out and meet with ranchers and hear about, you know, what they see as ways they could solve the problem. Sometimes they have the best ideas, actually.
You also provide dogs.
Yeah, sometimes we do. Dogs are tricky. You have to get dogs that, you know, will stand up to wolves, and you need more than one. But if you have a little pack of guard dogs, they can be really effective.
You know, we've talked to people on this program numbers of times about new methods of ranching where they rotate their cattle from one pasture to another, and instead of putting them on a very large range, they put them in small pastures and then move them after a few days to another and then to another. And that way the grass has a chance to regenerate. And I was thinking about those methods. I would think they would be really compatible with wolf recovery, in the sense that when you've got a group of cattle together in a small pasture, they're less likely. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, you know, some of the things that can help with wolves is specialized herding, and that's sort of teaching your cattle to bunch up, which is safer for the cattle and tends to discourage wolves. But so that's an important thing. And like I said, just having more presence. So if you're moving your cattle around to spare the grass, like you were just talking about, that also involves more cowboys to get them to move. So that will also help protect them from wolves. But, you know, one point I should make is that although an individual rancher might have problems with wolves, and we have respect for that, and we're happy to help with that, overall, wolves take incredibly small numbers of cattle. In New Mexico, it's 0.1% of cattle deaths are due to wolves, 0.1%. And those are, you know, those, that figure might actually be high because those are not confirmed wolf kills. Those are kills as reported in raw data by ranchers to the National Agriculture Statistics Service. So what I'm saying is it's important if they're your cows, but in the big picture, it's not a huge problem.
Well, I've always wondered about that number because I've seen that that number is very low, but there's also not very many wolves.
Exactly, and usually that number will go up some as wolves expand. So it's important for groups like Defenders and the Fish and Wildlife Service to be working all the time to expand our programs, to find ways to support our programs. You know, we're really interested in making coexistence really, that's what we call getting along, livestock and wolves coexistence with wolves, to make it accessible to the people on the land. And one way to do that, the Fish and Wildlife Service in Albuquerque has a new program called Coexistence Council, which is actually not only going to provide limited funds for paying the ranchers back after cows are lost, but also to provide incentive funds. And that'll be really interesting. It's a brand new innovative program, and we think it could be really helpful. It'll basically provide funding for ranchers for sort of hosting wolves on their public grazing allotments. And it might work really well. We're excited about it.
So let's get back to wolves in the wild. I mean, we were talking about how these wolves, the Mexican gray wolves, were saved from extinction through a captive breeding program. Then at a certain point, some of them were released back into the wild. What are we looking at now in the area of New Mexico where this program is active? We're talking about New Mexico and Arizona.
Right. At the last official count, which was last January, there were 83 wolves in the two states combined, and it was about half and half. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but about 30 or 40 some odd in New Mexico at the beginning of this year in January of 2014. So it is really a handful, and you know, there's no way that you could say such a handful of wolves or even 100 or even 200 would actually be recovered, because recovered means they can sustain themselves and they're safe from extinction. So we have a ways to go.
What would that look like? What would the conditions be for a stable, robust population that's not in danger of going extinct?
Well, you know, there's been some really good scientific work done on that, and it was done by the science team of the Mexican Wolf Recovery Team, convened by the Fish and Wildlife Service in the last few years. And they actually published that work in a journal called Conservation Biology, so it's peer-reviewed science now. And what they said is that we'll need 3 interconnected populations of wolves. You know, you can't sort of don't put all your eggs in one basket. So we'll need the current population in the blue and 2 other populations. And they indicated that the places that could support those populations would be northern New Mexico, southern Colorado, and the Grand Canyon ecoregion. And that each population would need to be at least 200 wolves with at least a total of 750. Which is really low. You know, you sort of have to set how much risk of extinction you're willing to take. But 750 is really, you know, the least that would keep them safe, we think, from extinction.
And so we're barely over 10% of the way there now. Let's talk about wolves as creatures within the larger ecosystem. I mean, we tend sometimes, perhaps because of the, you know, save the fill in the blank, save the wolf, save the whale, whatever, marketing campaigns, to focus on these magnificent creatures themselves, but they're really just part of a bigger system. What role do they play in their ecosystems in New Mexico and Arizona, and what kind of changes do you see or do you expect to see in that habitat if we were to have a robust wolf population?
You know, I think we can look towards some of the bigger groups of wolves in the Northern Rockies and in Yellowstone to try to find the answer, because we don't have enough wolves right now to have those ecological effects. But wolves, because they're, you know, at the top of the game as predators, they are just super important. It's as though they're sort of the key to everything in the ecosystem. So the easiest example or the simplest example is just to remember that wolves, when they hunt, they tend to cull the elderly animals, the sick animals, so they help the whole herd, you know, the whole elk herd's health. But I think what you're really referring to is this wonderful effect that's called trophic cascades, which wolves are definitely involved in. They're not the only players. But, for example, in Yellowstone, after wolves were reintroduced there, they played a role in the recovery of riparian vegetation, you know, vegetation along streams. They played a role in the recovery of songbirds and beaver. And the way that they do that is by just keeping these herds of elk or deer moving so that they don't browse that streamside vegetation down to nothing. So wolves, along with other factors, really change the face of Yellowstone. And we can look for that here, but we're going to need a few more wolves to do it. But I think that's good for everyone. That kind of ecological health is good for everyone in the state of New Mexico. It's good for the hunter. It's good for the rancher. It's good for the recreationalist. It's good for everyone.
We're talking to Eva Lee Sargent of Defenders of Wildlife about the Mexican gray wolf. So what is going on this morning? It's actually just in a little while at 9 o'clock this morning at the New Mexico Game Commission meeting. That's happening at the State Capitol building right here in Santa Fe.
At 9 o'clock, the Game Commission will meet, and they have an item on their agenda that has to do with the commission is setting themselves up as having to give permission for anything having to do with predators in New Mexico. So it used to be just the department could issue a permit for all these activities like moving predators, releasing predators, and the commission is setting themselves up as a gatekeeper. And they wrote this new rule really sort of broadly. I tend to worry if it might affect, you know, zoos in New Mexico that are raising Mexican wolves. It says that the commission has to vote and approve anything having to do with recovery of predators in New Mexico or conditioning of predators in New Mexico or reestablishment of predators in New Mexico. So it's really, you know, it's sort of a power play. It's that old dynamic of the states versus the feds. And, you know, I hate to see the feds slow down on Mexican wolves recovery. Mexican wolves cannot afford a slowdown, and yet the feds, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, always defers to the states. And, you know, they should. I mean, in some instances, the states are great partners in a lot of efforts to help wildlife, but the states tend to have a sort of a old-fashioned idea about predators. And so I'm afraid that if this commission votes to set itself up as sort of the gatekeeper on Mexican wolf releases, this anti-predator old-fashioned stance will tend to slow down releases of Mexican wolves in New Mexico. And releases in New Mexico are something we desperately need for this little population.
Now, the program right now by which Mexican wolves are being released, have been bred and released and so on and tracked, I mean, everything that you've been talking about, is that a federal program?
It's a federal program with help from the states. Now, you have to realize that New Mexico Game and Fish Commission dropped out of the program in 2011. So it was a cooperative effort between the states of Arizona and New Mexico, the federal government, the Forest Service, the White Mountain Apache Tribe. But New Mexico took themselves away from the table in 2011, which I found really odd. You know, they were on the recovery team, so they had a seat at the table. They were making themselves heard. They had staff in what we call the interagency field team, the people that go out every day and help the ranchers and monitor the wolves, and they just pulled out of the program in 2011. And it's a real, it's a shame. You know, I think it took some services away from the ranching community in New Mexico, and it's a real contrast between the Richardson administration when the Game and Fish Department and the commission were really supportive of Mexican wolf recovery.
What is changing? I mean, do you attribute this to the Susana Martinez administration? Do you attribute it to pressure from a certain type of anti-predator, anti-carnivore rancher? What's going on?
You know, I look at it sort of bigger picture. I sort of associate it with this whole Tea Party anti-government, anti-federal government movement. You know, if you look across sort of wolf recovery, you can see that while it inconveniences and makes life harder for some ranchers, in the big picture, the effects are pretty small. But a lot of the opposition is not really about the wolves themselves. The wolves are sort of a stand-in for anger at the government and frustration at the government. Sort of, you know, the government put these wolves here, and we don't like them. And it's not about the wolves themselves. So I think you're seeing a manifestation of the whole Tea Party anti-federal movement.
Among the ranchers who graze cattle on public land, and that is a very controversial practice here in New Mexico, do you get a sense that those folks feel that they're sharing the land with other uses?
You know, what I can tell you about that, I think that some ranchers do feel that way, and I think that a lot of ranchers are good stewards of the land. I can tell you that every year more and more New Mexico ranchers are starting to adopt these coexistence methods, are starting to say, okay, wolves are here, you know, we're going to learn to live with them. And they're having some successes, and it's really exciting to sort of see this shift. You know, what really needs to happen is the wolves, just like the mountain lions and the bears and all the other predators, need to just become the background, some of the background of ranching, and not sort of singled out for this, you know, to stand in for frustration about the federal government.
How do New Mexicans and Arizonans feel about wolf recovery? I know that there's been some polls about how the general population feels about it.
Yeah, there was some polling recently in the last year where New Mexico voters, when asked if they supported restoring Mexican wolves to more habitats in northern New Mexico, which, of course, is one of the places that the science says they need to go, 69% of New Mexico voters said that they support that. You know, there's amazing support in New Mexico and in Arizona. The numbers are similar in Arizona, even a little higher. Voters in both states, when asked if wolves are a vital part of America's wilderness and natural heritage, 87% agreed. And that's sort of amazing. It shows that there's great respect among people for the role of predators. And that respect just needs to translate to these sort of old-fashioned anti-predator attitudes that you know, a minority hold, but they're still very pervasive.
Well, in that minority, some of those folks sit on the New Mexico Game Commission, apparently.
Exactly. Exactly, Mary Charlotte. You got it.
So if people were to show up at 9 o'clock at the State Capitol building in room 321, which is where the Game Commission meeting is taking place today, and for our afternoon listeners, you've missed it, but for our morning listeners, you can head on over there. What is the role of the public right now?
The role of the public at this commission meeting is to either speak, or if you don't want to speak, just show up as a wolf supporter. It'll be obvious if there's other wolf supporters there. I'm sure there'll be people wearing wolf T-shirts. There'll be people handing out wolf stickers. If you do want to speak, you just need to speak from the heart. You'll have about 2 minutes. This agenda item should come up really quickly after 9 o'clock in the morning. And it's super easy, actually, to speak at these meetings. It's very casual. You just, you know, speak from the heart about why wolves are important to you and why you don't think that the commission should be setting up roadblocks to their recovery.
Evelie Sargent is Southwest Program Director for Defenders of Wildlife. Let us know how people can find out more information, and also if there's anything else you want to say before we go.
You know, if people want to learn more, there's a couple things they can do. One is to go to Defenders of Wildlife blog site. So all you'd have to do is Google Defenders of Wildlife blog, and it would take you right there. And we have a very recent blog about the changes that are proposed to the Mexican Wolf Program and a little bit of catch-up on the history. And all you have to do to find that blog, it was posted sometime last week, is just search for the word proposal, because that's in the title of the blog. And at the end of that blog, you'll find other links, including links that will let you comment on a new federally proposed rule change. So we would love it if people went there and read that. Another place they could go is a website that we participate in called MexicanWolves.org. And, of course, there's also a Mexican Wolves Facebook page, which is very good and very up-to-date.
And there's showing up in person at 9 o'clock at the New Mexico State Capitol Building, room 321.
Exactly.
Evelie Sargent, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. I appreciate it.